You may have seen the 2015 blockbuster HBO documentary The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. It told the story of the New York real estate heir with a lot of missing or murdered people in his past. His first wife, Kathleen, his neighbor, Morris Black, his best friend, Susan Berman. Well, Durst had already admitted to killing Morris Black. He said it was in self-defense, and he was acquitted of that. But in the fifth segment of the HBO film, The Jinx director Andrew Jarecki presents Durst with an envelope and an anonymous letter that was sent to police telling them the location of Susan Berman's body. The handwriting matches another envelope Durst had addressed, and on both, the word Beverly is misspelled in the same way. Durst was arrested in connection with Berman's murder a few days later. And then on the sixth and final part of the series, he seems to confess. He leaves the interview, walks off to the bathroom, still mic'd, and mutters to himself. Listen closely.
What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course.
What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course. Confession, right? The show had huge ratings. It won two Emmys and a Peabody. Durst's trial is set to begin soon. But the HBO film may be on trial as well, because it turns out those two seemingly incriminating lines were edited out of context by the filmmakers. NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik is here. And David, people thought this was a confession.
Right. It seemed as though you had a true crime series ending with a denouement that for once neatly wrapped things up. If you think of the frustration people had listening to the podcast Serial, they wanted the murder mystery resolved. Here was the team that brought you The Jinx about Robert Durst saying, we've got it resolved in his own words. What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course. We now know that that's not the sequence in which he said those words. You know, he was shown going into a bathroom in this hotel suite where they'd been interviewing him for a second sit down with this seemingly very damning evidence. And this evidence does seem damning. As you say, the writing seems to match his writing on that envelope that had alerted authorities to where they could find Susan Berman's body. And in fact, Beverly Hills was misspelled Beverly, L-E-Y, both in the way he writes it and in the way this anonymous note was written. Okay, mm-hmm. It suggests that he knows the body. And then it seems as though he's asking the question, what the hell did I do? And answers it, killed them all, of course. That's not how the transcript shows. The transcript shows him saying, and if you'll indulge me, he says, I don't know what's in the house. Oh, I want this according to the transcript submitted as part of the evidence. And then he said, killed them all, of course. And then he says something like, I want to do something new. There's nothing new about that. He possibly calls it a disaster and says, he was right. I was wrong. The burping. I'm having difficulty with the question. What the hell did I do? Now, it seems to me equally plausible that the question, what the hell did I do, is referring to him taking the interview at all. When he says, he was right, I was wrong, even the filmmakers at the time said they believed he was referring to the decision to do the interview, which in a sense was something he sought out after the same team basically had done a fictionalized version of him with Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Durst that he had liked, and he had called them afterwards, and that's how they initially connected. So the question seems to have an answer, but the question was actually posed after the damning statement or seemingly damning statement killed them all, of course.
Well, can I tell you, this is stomach-dropping for someone who's made documentaries. I mean, your thoughts on this?
I personally think it's deeply problematic. I think that you want to be transparent with your viewers about what you're doing. Journalists have to shape narrative. You know, you're not simply laying out the raw material of your notebooks and your microphones and your tapes and simply saying to the listeners and the viewers and the readers, hey, you go figure it out. You're trying to shape a story. And sometimes that means you present things in a slightly different order than you might have received it. Mm-hmm. That's all well and good. In this case, by presenting a question and a seeming answer in close proximity that were actually inverted order, I think you're doing something deeply deceptive. It doesn't mean that they haven't compiled damning evidence. It doesn't mean the prosecutors don't have a damning evidence. But it does seem to me that it's not clear that the question, what the hell did I do, has any relationship to the phrase killed them all, of course. And I think there has to be transparency. And let me say a couple of other things. On the question of trust, that very audio of him going into the bathroom trying to regain his composure, his equipoise, they said, we didn't know about that audio for 2 years because people at the time of the release of that film said, why didn't we know about that? And they said, we didn't know about it because since that audio was him on a lavalier-like on a lapel of his jacket and we weren't following him in with a video camera, the audio wasn't associated with usable video. We didn't check it out for a couple years. An intern stumbled across it or something like that a couple years later. Maybe. But having that as an O. Henry-like reveal at the end of the documentary was something that raised a lot of red flags. They said if this was known, this should have been turned over to law enforcement a long time ago.
Exactly. I mean, it's hard to think, you know, you wouldn't just – that's the audio you would listen to, talking to himself behind a closed door. And then if you did know about it and held it for 2 years and didn't give it to the police, because L.A. police have indicated that evidence uncovered by the series is what led to the renewed interest in Susan Berman's murder.
Clearly, it was very closely linked to the timing of when they picked him up. They thought he might be on the run after this very damning final episode that was airing on HBO. So they snatched him up, saying they believed they had indications that he might try to, as he had before, escape law enforcement in this case. And that's why they picked him up. Here's the funny thing. In terms of the question of whether or not they knew about that audio from 2 years earlier, it's a lot easier to credit somebody's explanation of something that's a little tough to swallow if you don't also now have an episode in which you think they were deceptive about how they presented things to you. I mean, we should be fair. You know, you've done documentaries. I've participated in them before. There's no board of review for documentaries. There's no controlling industry agency or government department that gets to say this is what you can do in a documentary and this is what you can't, right? So different documentary makers are going to have different codes of standards and of scruples. At NPR, we sometimes move around to audio but say it has to be in exceptionally rigorous context and exceptionally fairly presented. I don't think you can make that case about what's happened here. This serves a larger narrative that they think they may have in terms of the truth of the story. They may feel that they've conclusively gathered evidence of his guilt, but that's different than saying they've fairly presented the way in which his statements came out of his mouth.
Well, it sounds like there were about 20 lines. Maybe putting all of it in, you know, from behind a closed door might have also been powerful. Let other people figure out what the context is. It still is disturbing sound.
Oh, it's incredibly damning. It shows his confusion in some ways. It shows him grappling with questions of guilt and of trying to figure out what his role in his life has been. It's not super coherent. I totally agree with you. I mean, and that's also not as though HBO is, you know, like NBC having or CBS having to hit a sitcom perfectly after 30 minutes. A documentary on HBO has latitude in terms of how long it goes. They want to add an extra 20 seconds. That's fine. I also find it impossible to credit the explanation of Zach Stewart Pontier, one of the documentarians involved in this project, who basically said, hey, look, they're 10 seconds apart. The point at which in our presentation of the documentary, he says, what the hell do I do? And killed them all, of course. We didn't think people would link them or associate them. As a listener, a viewer, it's almost impossible not to link, killed them all, of course, not just link it to the question, but as an answer to the question. And, you know, there's this line that Janet Malcolm uses to open the famous book, The Journalist and the Murderer. And she writes, every journalist who's not too stupid or too full of himself to notice what is going on knows that what he does is morally indefensible. And she continues, he's a kind of confidence man preying upon people's vanity, ignorance, or loneliness, gaining their trust and betraying them without remorse. I don't believe that. I don't want to believe that. And I think that they may have felt that they were serving a higher truth, and that may blind them to the fact that there is a manipulation or seemingly, from my perspective, a deception going on here, even as the material they developed in the course of their documentary does seem quite damning.
And the prospect of seeing them on trial.
You know, look, I think right now Robert Durst has to address the fact that he's being tried in a murder out in California. And certainly his lawyers are going to try to make whatever hay they can out of this, suggesting a shadowy conspiracy between the documentary makers and law enforcement officials out in California. My guess is that this is certainly something useful to try to cast doubt on the credibility of the documentary makers. And their credibility may end up being an element of that trial and being, in fact, in a sense on trial. Haven't heard yet of any legal jeopardy they themselves would find themselves in.
NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik. David, thank you.
You bet.
And you might be wondering about using audio from someone who may not think they're being recorded. In some states, that is illegal. But at the time of the film, director Andrew Jarecki said that Durst signed a release in which he agreed we could use any recording of him in any way we deemed appropriate. He was well aware that he was mic'd, but it, the sound from the bathroom, was obviously a surprise, probably to both of us. Well, maybe more of a surprise to Durst, since we now know he didn't say what the filmmakers used.